Since the 1800s, Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group has been providing quality service and peace of mind to our clients. With our offices in Burlington, Stowe, and St. Albans, and our Dennis Ricker & Brown offices in Montpelier and Lennonville, we are here when you need us.
It's time for Radio Vermont's News and Public Affairs program, Open Mic, Mondays with Christine Moriarty. Phone lines to speak with Christine are open at 802-244-1777 and toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. And here's your host, Christine.
Good morning, everyone. This is the Open Mic Show, but it's the Open Mic Show with Christine. I'm working on that. I'll keep talking to Ken about making some other changes as well. But here we are going to talk about politics, but not much, because what about that soap opera that's going on down there? We will have our correspondent from D.C. coming in, but today's show will be the focus of family fun and finances. So let's get started. And here, I definitely will take call-ins as we go along in the show. Today we have an update for Wheels on Warmth. We have the commissioner from banking and finance coming in, and we also have a Halloween treat because we're going to have someone who knows a lot about Halloween and takes it from the spiritual side. So I want to hear what's going on in out there in the world of Vermont. And first of all, I want to give a little plug for those Patriots. As you know, if you listened last week, I'm a Bostonian. And I was actually, by the end, after 41 points for the Patriots and Tom Brady, I was actually rooting for them to get another touchdown. So I'm so glad the Bills were able to bring it into the 20 range for us. The other thing that we have, you may have noticed today's Halloween, and I want to see what you are up to in the audience for Halloween tonight or over the weekend. I noticed there was a lot going on in Burlington. There was a bicycle parade, which I wish I had seen. And if anyone went there, I'd love to hear how that went. And lots of trick-or-treating at different places. Did you? I found out that the average person spends $82 on Halloween. So I was thinking, $82. If I don't spend $82 on Halloween, how many people out there are spending a lot more? And what are they spending it on? It is a mix of candy, of course, decorations, costumes, and then parties and events. So this Halloween is now the largest holiday spending of the America after Christmas. I couldn't believe that. Can you imagine that? $8.38 billion. And we're going to talk today about the history of Halloween and where it has come from. So I have a lot of Irish and Celtic roots, and I always learned that it was Hallow's Eve. And this is the time of life when the Irish were finishing up with their agricultural routines, bringing in the harvest, and they felt like as it moved into winter, this was the time that the most spirits, there was a curtain and spirits could come in for the, and that's where the tricks came in. So the tricks, and people actually did actually go around and do tricks. So I always thought trick or treat was just a fun line, and what I was reading about or hearing about is that they were actually taking doorknobs and smearing them with grease or filling locks with glue. I'm just happy to give out candy if people aren't thinking about these things. So on the line now, we have Gwendolyn Evans from Essex Junction. Gwendolyn.
Good morning, Christine. Happy Samhain.
Happy Halloween. So happy Samhain. What is that, the Celtic root that you're addressing?
Yes. And well, your Celtic roots are in Ireland. Mine are in Wales. But there is so much crossover throughout the British Isles. And Samhain is one of the holy days of the ancient Celtic calendar. Whereas All Hallows' Eve is what the church changed the celebration to All Hallows' Eve and then the consequent November 1st. All Saints.
Isn't it fascinating that there was such a religious and spiritual connotation, and now we as Americans take it on, this Americanize it into a big business?
So
let's take a minute, Gwendolyn. You gave us some great information and better pronunciations than I could on what we really supposed to have for the day's greetings. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
All right. Well, I am a spiritual teacher and healer. I have been doing this for 16 or more years now. I worked in human services for a long time, but while I was doing that, in order to just give myself some time to decompress from a very, you know, intense field of work, I would take classes on things like, I have a dear friend who was a mentor in the spiritual path of Wicca, and I took healing classes, and I took herbology, and I did all these sorts of things, and I really found myself in a spiritual path that very different.
So can you tell us a little bit about Wicca? Because a lot of people just go, Wicca, oh my God, witch, we don't want anything to do with that.
Yeah, and that's very unfortunate. It's very unfortunate that we make judgments based on a perception of a word and not based on what the person is about and what their intent is.
And that goes across the board.
Indeed.
So, yeah, exactly. We could go on that.
No.
So Wicca, is it a spiritual practice?
Oh, Wicca is definitely a spiritual practice. It's an earth-centered spiritual practice. And, you know, it's related to the word witch, but the word witch, the roots come from an old Celtic word which meant to bend, and we can get into that a little bit more. But Wicca is a particular spiritual practice that actually came about from the early to mid-20th century, when people, particularly in the British Isles, were reclaiming some of the knowledge and practices of probably Druidism and other earth-centered paths that we don't have any, sort of documentation on, because back in ancient times, we're talking 5,000-6,000 years ago, maybe even maybe as early as 1,000 years ago, certainly, there were no records written. This was all done through oral tradition.
So it was, do you think people got carried away? Was there any tie to the Wicca and the witch trials in Salem, because being from Boston,
no.
Was just a fear monger.
That was fear, and really, to get back to the roots of the word witch, it had to do with being able to bend energy, and witches in ancient time were labels, negative labels put on a lot of women and some men who had healing powers, who had what we call herbal lore, which is they knew what herbs worked to heal and cure, and they made appropriate potions. They were actually very valuable healers to the village, but as they were seen as a threat because they did have this knowledge and lore. A lot of them were midwives. A lot of them, really honored the earth and where they came from. And they began to be seen as a threat to the church and a threat to, maybe some of the local authority or nobility around them. But they were healers.
They were healers, got it.
Teachers.
Yeah. So, I knew someone who claimed to be a witch in the Boston area,
mm-hmm.
who'll go nameless,
yeah.
and she had incredibly long fingernails, mm-hmm. long black hair,
mm-hmm.
and cakes of makeup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if she just put a hat on, she would have been a witch to look at. So do you look anything like that, since we're on radio and no one can see you?
You know I don't.
Yeah, but no one.
I actually my hair used to be long, and I can't. I'm an artist. I can't have incredibly long fingernails.
So
I, you know, there are people, who really run with it and like to be very dramatic, and a lot of and what I have found in my own personal travels. Is that in America, the experiences of Wicca and witch and pagan are sometimes, particularly with younger people, they're sometimes sort of reactions to what their experiences might have been around traditional, what we don't want to call traditional, but sort of Christian religion or some kind of limiting beliefs in their families. And so they tend to like to be diving into the dramatics.
Okay, so that it's good to know there's more than one type of witch out there.
Oh, God, yes.
And yeah. I like...
And if you have fun with it, that's okay.
Okay.
As long as it doesn't harm anyone.
Right, or scare anyone, except for tonight.
Right, except for tonight. That's the thing, is that Wicca is a path that has to do with honoring the earth. And being in alignment energetically and knowing that the earth is more than just a rock we live on.
Which brings us back to Halloween, because yeah. Halloween, it was the transition into winter.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a very spiritual time when the curtain was drawn up and people thought fairies could move through the curtain easier and spirits from the past, and that's... I didn't know this for sure, though. I think I heard it back years ago from my dad, is that people dressed up on Halloween night so the spirit didn't come and get them. And we, you know, and people were all in the Celtic tradition about the fairies and the spiritual and but tying everything to the earth that there is. And I know, because I've seen them in Ireland, still fairy mounds in the middle of a field.
Yeah,
you've
yeah.
seen them yourself.
I have been to many sacred sites in England and Wales and have felt the energy pull of many of those places. And, isn't it interesting that many people say, oh, they don't believe in that stuff, and yet there's a draw to these places.
And here's Ireland, which has traditionally been very Catholic, but yet there are trees that... developers have refused to put take down and they build around or farmers who need the fields, but they will let those fairy mounds stay there because of the spiritual and that connection, that there's something more, and that is about the earth, isn't it?
It is. And and I will say that Samhain, as we know it, is not the only day in which the veil is thin. I'll talk about the earth religions in general, that the earth holy days in general are all based around the calendar. Originally, the Celtic calendar was 10 months.
Uh-huh.
So this would be an ending of the year. This would be like a New Year's celebration in a way. We are entering into the dark time of the year, or... as I like to think of it, the yin time, that where we can work with the feminine energies that are about pulling ourselves inward, resting and reflecting, and, what else are we going to do when it's 20 below zero and snowing?
Absolutely, and this is a great time for me to remind the listeners that we turn our clocks back this weekend. So we're going into even more of a dark time as time goes on.
Exactly.
So these holidays are all tied, or these events are tied to something else. I know tomorrow is All Souls Day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think Celtic has been doing this for 2,000 years, and we bought this over from Ireland, England, and Wales.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And what I find really interesting is that I had the good luck of catching both a cousins and a friend, and the cousins live in Ireland, and the friend lives in England, and asked them about trick-or-treating mm-hmm. when they were young.
Yeah.
And both of them said they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
However, now the children are doing it.
Yeah.
So it's something, it's kind of like the Celtic brought it over to America. We made it this huge event.
Yes, a little commercial.
A little. Did you hear me say it's the second biggest commercial?
Yeah. Isn't that something?
It is amazing. It is amazing. Yeah. And we take this and we're bringing it back there. And now mm-hmm. the kids are getting dressed up and having candy and going trick-or-treating and using that.
Yeah.
The world is a small place.
It is. And one of the reasons they didn't do this sort of thing, the trick-or-treating and so forth, that all of these current traditions around Halloween are, you know, sort of brought forth from the church to the British Isles to Ireland to America and back and forth. And we've sort of taken it on and run with it and had some fun with it. But really, in the ancient times, this holiday was about, first of all, celebrating the harvest. This was the last, there were three harvest holy days. And this would have been the last of them, because all the crops would have been taken in, and the earth would be going into its dormancy. So you celebrate that. And the other piece of this is, this is a time to honor the ancestors and communicate with them.
Absolutely. And you know where that ties in? And we're with Gwendolyn Evans, who's a spiritual healer, has done a lot of work in classes in Wicca and is an artist in the area. And one of the things I found interesting is, because we focus on the mischief night and the mm-hmm. candy, and also, though, the spiritual part of the dead and connecting with the dead is also the Mexican, has Mexican roots.
Every indigenous peoples in the world have had some form of celebrating their ancestors, because without our ancestors we wouldn't be here, right? And so it wasn't necessarily, I was just reading also about the Mexican Day of the Dead, which used to be celebrated in the summertime, but the church moved it to this time to
kind of. Is that how it got moved to here? Because I was reading about the Mexican Day of the Dead as well.
Yeah.
And how people go and they set up altars at home mm-hmm. and then they go to mm-hmm. the graves and they decorate. And so of the church moved it. Got it. Because that's the church added the holy day of mm-hmm. All Souls Day to mm-hmm. coordinate, as you said, with the Celtic traditions. It's really interesting, the power of those Celtic traditions still.
Yeah, it is.
Gwendolyn, we're going to take a break for a minute, and then we are going to, if you hold on and we enjoy having you, mm-hmm. then we'll open it up to questions and continue our conversation.
All right.
This is Greg Haskin, president of Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom. We don't want you to choose us because we're local. We want you to choose us because of what local means to you. Here's Vicki Centerbar.
What I really love about working for Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom is the fact that it's a very community-involved company. It's stayed small enough to stay in touch with its customer base. We're not just some faceless company. We are involved and we do participate in the neighborhoods that we work in. Well, I've worked for the big companies, and the big companies try to ward off the personal interactions. We live right here. And we work right here. And people love that.
The pride of the past, the best of the future, it's right here at home.
Taking local to a whole new level means providing services and pricing that are second to none. Waitsfield and Champlain Valley Telecom, a proud part of the communities we serve for over a century.
This is Topper McFawn.
And Rob LeClaire, your state representatives for Barrytown.
Rob and I are seeking re-election. We'd appreciate your vote on November 8th.
You can vote early by contacting your town or city clerk for a ballot.
Your vote matters, so please remember to vote.
What's the second largest industry in Vermont? Banking and insurance?
No, try again.
Healthcare?
No, according to the U.S. Department of Commerce, it's government.
Government spending in Vermont has grown at nearly twice the rate of inflation for the past decade.
The supermajority in the State House continues to pass budgets with expenses that exceed revenues. It's time to stop this reckless spending habit.
With your support, we can continue working to rein in spending and to hold our government officials accountable. We appreciate your vote on November 8th.
This message was paid for by Rob LeClaire and the Committee to Elect Topper McFarland.
Hello, this is Christine Moriarty, and we are at Open Mic with Gwendolyn Evans, who is a spiritual healer and has a website, lovingself.net. And Gwendolyn, thanks again for being on the show. This is a great conversation, and I'm hoping people learn more than it's about sugar and chocolate for tonight.
Right, I'm trying to avoid that one myself.
Do you get trick-or-treaters?
I don't. I live in a condo association, and I think we've kind of aged out of kids coming this way. They do show up in other parts of the neighborhood.
To me, that's the favorite part of Halloween, is the kids. And we live in a small town up in Lincoln, and there is very few trick-or-treaters. I always have candy, but very few trick-or-treaters. So the goal, I think a lot of kids go to the town centers like Lincoln Center, and that's where action is happening, or downtown Bristol, and those are the fun places.
Yeah.
So I'm going to open up. I want to continue our conversation, but I'd like to open up the lines. If someone has any questions for Gwendolyn or just wants to share their favorite trick-or-treat story, because I think this Halloween, it's great to get a little education. And we are claiming that Halloween is a Celtic tradition, and that's where it came from. And we're talking about the Mexican tradition of called Dia de los Muertos. And maybe someone else has some other religious or even Vermont tradition that we don't know about. Mm-hmm. So the lines are 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 1-877-291-8255. So feel free to give a call with a question or just a favorite story about Halloween. Do you have a favorite story about Halloween, Gwendolyn? No.
I'm trying to think. I wouldn't say that in the past I haven't had a favorite story of Halloween, but one of the things that I do, as you know, I still have my Wiccan leanings, but I feel much more universalist now, but I'll always have these leanings. So this is a day where at night I like to just kind of pull in and spend some time meditating. I contact and work with my ancestors all the time. Is one of the things that I do is I do intuitive readings, and people come to me and ask me all sorts of questions, and yes, their ancestors pop in and talk to me, but I keep, for example, I connect with my grandmother all the time.
So in other words, you can recognize that there is a lightening of the veil, but you don't. You go into it rather than put on a costume like the old Celts, so that they wouldn't get swept into it.
I know how, as I've had a good bit of training in my own psychic work, that I know what is the sensation of energy that feels good and what doesn't feel good. I know where that it comes from the light. And if it comes from the light, I welcome them. I don't have too many problems with any other kind of thing, because I feel very strong in my center.
Great.
And that's important.
Absolutely.
Tonight is also a night to do divination. So a lot of people in the pagan community might do some tarot readings or some divination, some kind of divination, because the veil is so thin at this time of the year. You can really utilize the time to seek out wisdom. This is a time to go into reflection, and might be a good time to review what's going on.
So this is more than about parties and celebrating everything, though people seem to be making about what they want to make it about. Back to the Mexican holiday, the Day of the Dead, they actually go on for 2 days, so I find it amusing that it's Day of the Dead. They also haven't been celebrating Halloween with the trick-or-treat costume decorating theme.
Yeah.
until the most recent handful of years.
Yeah.
So this is catching on to them. And at the same time, we are bringing all these festivals because of the large Latin American community mm-hmm. throughout the country, in Tucson, in Phoenix, in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
So as that all grows, do you think the spiritual practices are growing as well?
I don't quite see that.
Okay. So they're just a part of people's history that they're bringing
yeah,
in.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important to keep the cultural history and practices alive. But, you know, here in America, we really have gotten into the sugar aspect and the party aspect of it. And it isn't so much a tradition with us who've been Americans for some generations.
Right.
And where we're really sitting down and honoring our dearly departed.
When the Celtics or people in Ireland went to door to door to tell people they were going to do tricks or treat, they really meant it,
yeah.
that they were going to do some tricks. And I've heard
Irish, yeah.
Exactly.
All
they
the
like
leprechauns and all.
Totally. They have a sense of humor and they can do these tricks. One of them that was very common I heard is to pull apart the horse and cart and bring both of them into the living room when the owners were sleeping. So I would definitely make sure I provide candy for anyone who came. But those kids or young adults were only looking for apples and nuts.
Exactly.
That was what they gave.
That's what they had.
That's what they had, but those were treats as well.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I don't think...
Wonderful, healthy treats.
Absolutely. I don't think I'd be a big hit if I started giving out apples and walnuts.
And that's too bad.
it is too bad. But, you know, I do, and maybe this was an early sense of what I was going to work in life, but I do remember the neighbor who put nickels in a bag and gave them out for trick-or-treat.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
was
I
one of the favorites. She stayed away from the candy.
Yeah. That's
she definitely
right.
stayed away from the candy.
Yeah, that's all right.
I actually have a mother who's quite a character.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to go to the firehouse dressed up late after trick-or-treating, like, in, you know, after all the kids left.
Mm-hmm.
And they would all know her, but they wouldn't know who she was dressed up. And one time she got some water thrown on her. She knew if she talked. But she got the biggest kick out of dressing up, and that was never my thing. Matter of fact, I have a friend, we always connect on Halloween and say, you're not dressing up this year. No, I'm not dressing up this year. And I went once. Here's my favorite Halloween story. I went once when I was in college, my RA and I. Martha Bell. If anyone knows where Martha Bell is here, there's a name that pulled up from the past. We decided we didn't want to celebrate Halloween on campus, so we'd get away from all the decorating and getting dressed up.
Mm-hmm.
We drove up to Montreal for the night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We went to dinner. Mm-hmm. There are more people dressed up on the streets of Montreal than anywhere in Burlington. Yeah. So that was really not a good plan, but it was a good story that we had in the end.
Well, I will admit to having, upon occasion, dressed up. I had to, you know, as we were saying about people who choose to, you know, really get into the whole look of being a witch, whether it's Halloween or not, I have in my possession one of those cone-shaped witch's hats.
Yes, right? In black, of course.
It's black, but it is covered with feathers and little purple lights because I just can't take it seriously. So I have that with a matching pair of feathered gloves, and if I need to whip something out, that's what I do.
That's great. That's great. And do you know witches aren't even on the high on the costume list for kids?
No.
Princesses, superheroes.
I always wanted to be a princess.
Prince. Always. Yeah, that would be the treat, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the favorite costumes I heard, I was asking people out there over the weekend what people were dressing up in, mm-hmm. and Legos were popular.
Yeah, that makes
Lego
sense.
Costumes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All sorts of different things, from cupcakes to sports announcers. Really, it's become a whole different tradition. And I think in my family it used to be, okay, what do we have? Okay, you can be a hobo. We can quickly make that up with a bandana and a stick and some old clothes. Okay, you're good to go. So this has really turned into a big business around Halloween.
Can we talk about some of the foods of this day?
Yes, please
do. It's not just about sugar and candy.
Okay, tell us some of the foods of the day, and then we'll move into some of the spiritual sites you've seen before we have to wrap up.
Absolutely.
And so, again, I have Gwendolyn Evans on the line with me.
So, of course, apples are a big one. You know, there is a tradition of Halloween or parties bobbing for apples and that sort of thing. But apples, this is the time of year for apples. And apples have a tremendous amount of folklore. You know, the poison apple that the witch gave Snow White.
Ah, those witches and apples.
Yes,
I'm seeing how they go
apples.
Along.
Unfortunately, that's a negative one, but there's a lot of other kinds of folklore around apples. So apples, being that this is the season for our delicious crop of apples, pumpkins.
How did pumpkins start? Just because of the harvest?
Because that's what we had here in America. We had pumpkins, and it was more likely in the British Isles that you would see lanterns carved out of turnips, and those were spirit lanterns. Those were lanterns to help guide the spirits.
That's why we have jack-o'-lanterns?
Yes.
Who knew that out there?
Who knew? Right. And, all of those things have to do with what was available from the harvest at this time of year.
And something to guide the spirits.
And
now that
to guide the spirits.
Make sense about the light.
Leaving offerings of food, plates of food for your departed loved ones.
Oh, so not just like for Santa Claus, you're leaving for the departed.
Yes, absolutely. People would actually set a place and fill the plate and all of that, and then at the end of the evening, they would take it out and leave it for their departed loved ones or the little animal beings to come and consume the feast.
Ah.
Yes.
Great. Thank you for sharing those foods with us. Sure. And we talked about some of the spiritual things over there.
Mm-hmm.
And what other spiritual sites tie into Halloween that you have seen or tie into the Celtic tradition and Druids? We could run a long list, I'm sure, but let's talk about one or two before hopefully Ken will come in and give me the Whales for Warmth update.
Right. I have to say that we have so many overlapping things. One of the hallmarks of this, for me, of this night is we now are at the halfway point between the autumnal equinox, which in Celtic tradition was a feast called Mabon.
Which is September
21st.
Yeah,
yep. September. And then we go to this holiday. And in another 6 weeks or a little more, we will have the winter solstice.
Mm-hmm.
So for this next 6 weeks is the darkest time of the year in terms of our light, our sunlight, our daylight. And I love celebrating the winter solstice because I need light. I need that sunlight. So I enjoy coming to that point and realizing that every day after that longest night of the year, it will become more and more light each day.
That is a great point. Thank you for putting that perspective on.
Sure.
Well, this has been a real treat to have you on, and this is Gwendolyn Evans, and her website and her work is around healing and spirituality.
And the earth.
And the earth, which comes out of the Wicca tradition.
Yeah.
And what's your website again, please, Gwendolyn?
www.lovingself.net, and folks can find me on Facebook as well.
Great. Is it Loving Self or is it Gwendolyn Evans?
It's Gwendolyn Evans.
Gwendolyn Evans on Facebook. Thank goodness for social media.
Amen.
We can find it easily. And they can reach out to you and see about your work and your spirituality and your connectedness to the earth. And I just want to put a plug in, too, because I know you're an artist as well as a healer. And you often have events. And is that posted on your website and at your Facebook page?
It's more often posted on the Facebook page. I do have events, and I do teach classes in things like crystal healing, energy healing. I channel once a month, as you know, Christine. I have a channel, a group, and I channel Mother Earth to answer questions about what's going on in the world today.
Great. Well, we that might be a better source of information than going down to Washington to see what's going on, but we'll be going down there.
A more complete picture, that's for sure.
That's good. Thank you so much, Gwendolyn, for being on with us.
It's such a pleasure, Christine.
Happy. How do we say the proper name again?
Sowen.
Sowen.
Yes, as if it was spelled S-O-W-E-E-N.
Okay. All happy
right?
Sowen.
Good.
Take care.
You
Thank
too.
You for joining us.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Gwendolyn Evans, and we had a conversation about Halloween and how happy we were to be into the season here and the Celtic's roots. And I am lucky enough to have my next person, and Ken Squire is actually going to show up on my show and tell us about Wales for Warmth. And if we can get the update, I know it was raining, it was cold, there were people, there were lines. What happened on Saturday?
What happened on Saturday?
Well, I know it was Wales for
rained,
Warmth.
It rained, it poured, and so did the people.
So
they just poured out from everywhere and made it a grand success. I don't know what the numbers are yet.
They're still calculating. That's a good sign.
Yeah, and it did beautifully in Rutland.
Oh, great.
And all around. The volunteers for this program, as much as anything, makes it all worthwhile, because there is such cooperation among so many different groups to make this a successful venture.
Including the Norwich hockey team.
And the Norwich women's hockey team. Undefeated, mind you.
They haven't played yet, Ken.
Well, that's true. You know, play it for all you can.
Right, exactly.
But they were great gals, and they came, and these young women were helping lug tires for people to their cars and so forth, and thank you for them.
That's great. So it was a success, and I heard there were people in line, and all hours of the morning.
1 a.m.
1 a.m.
1 a.m. they started lining up.
Did they put snow tires on for people?
No.
Well, you know, that would have made my trip worthwhile, because I actually have the snow tires. I just didn't put them on yet.
Yeah, but. Well.
Do we get to
fool on you?
Yeah, it was my. I didn't listen to Roger Hill, and the state wasn't coming out because only McCullough and a few other roads probably
nailed.
Yeah. They did get nailed. So I'd love to hear what other roads out there that people were trying to travel this morning. And some people were up and over and without those snow tires.
It ended a little early this year
because of the rain.
No, because there was just such a grand influx at the very top of the day.
There were no tires left,
so it ended at about I think noon or 12:15, 12:30, somewhere in there.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, but I can't wait to hear what the numbers are.
Me too. I thought we'd have a count by now, but apparently they took yesterday off resting.
Yeah. No. It takes a while because they've got to bring in. The results from the other places where this has been
Rutland
going on.
And
the big
well.
One, of course, is Casella down in Rutland.
Okay, so they have to hear from
but,
that.
Well, we'll have a report usually by the end of this week. This is such an incredible volunteer effort, and they had additional tents, thank goodness, that they had put up so people could. The weather was fierce. It was nasty and cold and wet. And everyone seemed to have a good time.
Where there's a bargain, there's a good time.
Well,
and whenever you're helping people, there's a good time.
$20 for the big tires, and $15, and then $10. So people that truly needed them, and they've tried to hoe out because there's always some that you know are suspect.
Just want a bargain.
Yeah. Well, they not only want a bargain, they come back and get four sets. Because they go in the tire business. And they've really tried to quell that because this is a program to help people, single parents, older people, young people getting started that just simply can't afford to go out and buy tires.
And we need snow tires. And put those snow tires on, will you, out there? Because that's really important this time of year.
Well, summer tires, fall tires, spring tires are in the collection. But it was so well organized and so well run. And that's been the history. 12th annual was a very big success.
Excellent. And you've been at all 12, haven't you?
Say?
You've been at all 12?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's incredible.
Went home and went to bed for the rest of the day.
I don't blame you. But then you were watching the race yesterday, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
How did that turn out?
Well, I tell you, what really turned out well yesterday, it was a great victory for Jimmy Johnson, who's not the best liked guy, and it's just because he's kind of vanilla.
Mm-hmm.
But he was absolutely motivated, and I want to talk about it on my sports at 12:15.
I won't take it away from you then.
Because there's a young lady from Granville, Vermont, who was a star in Victory Lane.
Was she?
Yeah, stay tuned.
Oh, I will be watching. Thanks, Ken, for coming on and being with us. Hello, this is Christine Moriarty, and I'm back with the Open Mic Show. We had a pleasure talking with Gwendolyn Evans about Halloween, and we're open on the lines for 244-1777 or toll-free at 1-877-291-8255 and to hear your stories about Halloween or some Halloween traditions that you've had. And this is the fun part of the show in the first half, because I really enjoy hearing about these Halloween stories. In the second half of the show, we're going to get down to some business. We'll hear from Victoria Jones in D.C., and we'll also have the Commissioner of Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, Mike Piak, on here with us. We'll be talking about financial regulation, bank regulation, the banks and credit unions in the state of Vermont, and, of course, the big news that hit the area last week was the merchants' purchase or merger with Community Bank Systems of New York. So stand by for that. After the top of the hour. So, Tom. Good morning. What about your Halloween? What are you doing tonight?
I have to go to my mother's house because she has a Scottish Terrier, and the Scottish Terrier goes ballistic when the kids come to the house.
So you mind the Terrier or you watch the kids?
I watch the Terrier. We go down in the cellar so she can watch TV and not terrorize the... She's a friendly dog. She's one of those... If you know Scottish Terriers... They kind of own the world, they think, so...
Your mother doesn't just choose to dress her up and use her as a trick?
No, that would be too painful for her. And plus, she's not good. She would run out and get hit by a car. She's just a... It's not a good night for her.
So you're doing your Halloween duty tonight.
I'm doing that duty, yep.
Your mother likes giving out that candy?
She does like it.
Whereabouts?
She loves to
Where
see
are
it. They live over in... I grew up in Barrie. I live in Montpelier. She lives in Barrietown.
So a lot of people are down in Barrietown going...
Yeah, you know, it's like, I think Gwendolyn was saying, you know, we have a neighborhood that it's a lot of older families now. Now there's some newer people coming in. When they first moved into that area, and, I don't know, 20 years ago, we would get just bombed by... There'd be kids lining up, and then there was that transition. People moved away, people aged, and kids grew up, and now they're starting to come around again.
So did you get to do any celebrating over the weekend?
For, like, Halloween or anything? What did I do? No, not really. It was
I noticed that people just spread out the holidays now.
They do. It can go on forever.
On my way through Richmond, I saw some great... Okay, I think they were alligators or dinosaurs. Two parents pushing a baby carriage dressed as dinosaurs. It was great.
Don't see that every day.
You don't see that every day. And I did do a double take, but I thought, oh, it's Halloween. Okay, people
right.
are doing it.
Makes
they're
sense there.
They're definitely in the spirit of it that has... Well, this is no Halloween prank. I got a news story, too, that just caught my eye that I don't know if anyone's seen.
Well, please share. Go ahead.
For the third time, Johnson & Johnson's been hit with a multi-million dollar jury verdict over whether talc in its iconic baby powder causes ovarian cancer when applied regularly. Late Thursday, St. Louis jury awarded $70.1 million to a Montesto, California woman who was diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer in 2012. She used Johnson's baby powder for more than 40 years, as many women do. She blamed it on, Honor Cancer and accused J&J of negligence. Two other trials in St. Louis reached similar outcomes this year, awarding the plaintiff $72 million and $55 million. So this is something that we all have, and I'm wondering if anyone's been paying attention or catching these stories. I had a friend with a new baby who sent me along that story and said, oh my God, you thought baby powder was safe. But we're back to Halloween with a call from Jean and Barry.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Jean.
Well, I had kind of a sad one 15 years ago. My mother's funeral was on Halloween.
It was.
It was raining, and I prayed a little prayer. I said, I hope we get to the cemetery before we get to him. It will stop raining.
And
it did.
It did.
And then, so then we got to the restaurant. And while after we got to the restaurant, it started to snow. But when we went into the restaurant, there was these waitresses all in costumes. I says, oh, my gosh, it's Halloween. I hadn't even thought of it being Halloween.
And
my mother's funeral was on Halloween. She would have got a kick at that because she used to love to see the little kids, and give them candy.
Oh, that's great.
So it turned it out be pretty good. We had a pretty good time anyway. And kind of a happy and a sad combined time.
So when we were talking about the spirits and being close to spirits, you really probably feel that this time of year.
Yeah, and I didn't even think of it being Halloween till I got in the restaurant and see these ones all dressed in costume. And I says, oh my gosh, today is Halloween. Wouldn't my mother laugh?
I love that.
Halloween.
It probably put a smile on your face at a hard time.
It did. It did. It kind of shook us up a little bit, I think some of the others didn't stop to think it was Halloween. Of course, I was older, and so, but it turned out to be pretty good, that way. But we did get a little snow, so that was all afterwards.
It isn't unusual to get snow around this time of year, especially in Vermont, so people should know to get their tires on.
Oh, it snowed like the devil. It really come down.
It seems like you got a little of everything up there from heaven.
Yeah, and of course I live in Barrie, but I was living in Montpelier then.
Okay,
and
it's snowed.
But it's weather-wise, we never know. But I guess we've got a pretty good day for the kids today.
It is great. I hope you'll be giving out some candy.
Well, I don't know. They locked the place here where I live.
That's
the cure. I'm in my 80s.
So they won't let those little goblins and fairies run around.
I think it's from 4 to 5 where they can go to stores and stuff, too,
Great. That's good. Nice and safe.
They can go to stores, and the clergy and all of them there hand out candy to the kids.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Jean, for joining us and being on with your favorite story.
Well, you have a happy Halloween.
You, too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's great to have these memories sprinkled into the story here on the call. I think that Halloween is one of the best occasions for family and fun. I've seen lots of family out there doing trick-or-treats all together. I've seen people go into the haunted houses. So there's a lot of haunted hayrides and different events going on here in Vermont as well. And I think tonight's the last night. And there is a new haunted train. I don't know if anyone's taken that, but that goes along from Burlington down to Shalott and back up again. So I'd love to hear any stories at Halloween or what your roots are around Halloween. If this Celtic tradition we have of Halloween has been around for ages, or how much even you've spent on Halloween. Being that money person that I am, I care about how this, turned from a 2,000-year-ago celebration in Ireland around Irish myths and fairies and the banshees to the Halloween spending that we have today. The people today are spending an average of $82 a piece on Halloween, and the Halloween spending is an $8.38 billion industry. The one that gets me is the 300 million people spend on Halloween attractions. For some reason, I like to be scared on Halloween, but I could do without that dressing up and going out and trick-or-treating. The kids, I think that's perfect for, but the scaring. And what's the psychological benefits of being scared and screaming, yet we'll all pay for that kind of benefit? And the haunted mansions, the haunted hayrides, they're just growing and growing. There is a 1030 Productions that started out in L.A., started doing hayrides in New York, not far out of New York City. They take a hayride through the city, scaring people. And they're about to build that business and take it right down into Dallas. So Halloween is definitely a fun and time for everyone, but there's different reasons whether people like it, whether they like to be scared, like to get dressed up, like to have some candy. We're not intending to do anything scary today, but we are going to talk about some financial things with the Commissioner of Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Honored to have Mike Piacchi come on the show after the top of the hour at the 10 o'clock news. We'll also be hearing from Victoria Jones down in D.C., and we can see what is going on in the latest in D.C., if they know what's going on or what turn of events from this weekend that really has been quite the soap opera is the only words I can say. And I was never a fan of soap operas, so this one is not doing me very well either. The only, I want to say the big plus is it will be over a week from tomorrow, but I have a feeling it won't be over that quickly. I think we'll just know more in another 8 days.
Certainly, so, some good points there. You know, one thing they're doing, and we do have about a minute and 15 seconds, and it's certainly nice to visit with you today. I think you're doing a very nice job, your first solo day, Christine.
Thank you very much, Tom.
But the number of communities, I know Morrisville is one of them, is some of those downtown houses that get really hit by a lot of Halloween trick-or-treaters, people can donate candy to help them pass out.
What a great idea. So thank you for sharing that.
So, and many communities are doing that. Maybe they'll have a Halloween celebration somewhere and people can donate candy.
That's great. I know that in our local town, a lot of people, if they have a house where a lot of people come in, someone from the country in the rural area will go in and it will be a twofer for the kids, but more fun for the adults. They get to give out candy because no one would have come to the house. Hello, we're back with Open Mic. This is Christine Moriarty on my opening day, and I am happy to turn it down to talk to Victoria Jones down in D.C. Victoria, it's Christine Moriarty this morning.
Hello.
How are things down there in D.C.? What's going on? Anything need to hear about?
Fairly quiet down here, you know. Nothing to talk about.
Nothing to talk about. Is the temperature getting pretty hot down there with the latest email events?
Yeah, just a little bit.
And is it the soap opera that I'm making it out to be? Democrats, Republicans, what's going to happen tomorrow? Or is that all that people can think about, this a presidential election?
Yes, I would say people are, they're trying to figure it out. They're trying to work out why James Comey chose to release the information that he did last Friday when he hadn't seen the emails. Why they chose to release information on an ongoing investigation when it's not their policy to do so. And particularly when it's specifically Department of Justice policy not to do so close to a major election that could upset the result. So according to people familiar with his thinking, he felt that the information that they had, these emails, was going to leak out anyway, and that if he didn't put it out, that he could come in for criticism. So he felt that he was going to be damned either way, and that he ought to get the information out there. But other people are saying that, well, that wasn't a good enough reason to put the information out there, particularly if you hadn't seen the emails and didn't know if there was anything pertinent in them. So it's really become very, very controversial.
And is it more fuel to add to the fire of this election that was already roaring?
No question about it. It's enormous fuel to the fire.
Yeah. And because of this conversation of the presidential election, which is the biggest thing happening in the country, is anyone also talking about and considering what can happen with Congress, and both from the Democrat and Republican side, but also that more women could be coming in, if depending on what happens in the election? We could have the most women ever?
No, I don't think they're talking about that right now. I think they're talking about what's happening with Congress, and, you know, whether the Senate's going to flip, whether there are going to be seats lost to the Republicans in the House. I do think they're talking about that. I think they're starting to talk about some of the demographic makeup of Congress. I think they're starting to talk about that.
Okay.
But I think that they're only just turning their attention to, you know, are we about to see, you know, more women in Congress? Are we about to lose the only two black Republicans in the House? Things like that,
and
which we might be about to lose.
Okay. And anything else going on down there, or it's so quiet that...
The other things. Well, that people are also starting to look at, okay, what are the issues on state ballots? You know, what are the initiatives? What are the things going on around the country? What are people voting on that don't have anything to do with Clinton and Trump? So think things like that. Because there are some very interesting issues going on around the country, and those are starting to come to the fore now, and so people are talking about those issues, and there are some, you know, there are always hot button issues like universal background checks. Maine and Nevada are both voting on those, and California is going to decide on whether it's going to have background checks on ammunition purchases. Massachusetts, close to you, is going to be voting on giving farm animals enough space to lie down and stand up and turn around in.
So we have the gun legislation, we got agricultural legislation,
yep.
And a few in that marijuana legislation coming through.
Yeah, we've got marijuana legislation coming up as well. In several states, actually, we've got that going on. We've got death with dignity legislation in Colorado. We've also got minimum wage legislation in Maine, Arizona, and Colorado. We've got that going on. We've got some cigarette legislation, taxing legislation in Colorado, California, and Missouri, and medical marijuana. I don't know if we just talked about that. Florida, North Dakota, Arkansas, and more capital punishment. California, Nebraska, Oklahoma. Deciding initiatives on capital punishment, and California and Nebraska deciding whether to ban the death penalty, and Oklahoma voting on whether to put it into their state constitution to keep it.
So we will be standing by on a whole range of social issues as well as the presidential election. And thank you, Victoria. And we'll be talking to you next week, and then we'll know a whole lot more in 2 weeks, won't we?
Oh, we'll know almost everything.
Have a great week.
Thank you, you too.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Welcome back. This is Christine Moriarty with Open Mic, and I am lucky enough to be here with the Commissioner of Financial Department of Regulations, Mike Pichek. And Mike, there's so much to talk about in the whole industry of banking in the state of Vermont. But first, let's keep it simple. What about this name change? I already miscalled the department once during the show. Tell me about the name change.
That's right, Christine. So we like to think of ourselves as the department formerly known as Bishka, which is sort of like the prince, the prince name. But we used to be called Bishka for Banking, Insurance, Securities, Healthcare Administration. In 2010, the governor, Peter Shumlin, broke off Healthcare Administration into the Green Mountain Care Board. So since the CHA disappeared from our name, we had to rebrand ourselves. So sometime, I think it was about 2012, we became the Department of Financial Regulation, or DFR.
So I'll try and get up to speed 4 years later. Thank you very much. And how long have you been with the department?
So I've been with the department almost 3 years. I started off as the Deputy Commissioner of the Securities Division, and in July was promoted by the governor to Commissioner.
Great. Congratulations. Here we are. So you have a long history with the department.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in the securities division, you know, we regulate our investment advisors, our broker-dealers, securities offerings in Vermont. The department also regulates the banking industry in Vermont, our state-chartered banks, our state-chartered credit unions.
Let's talk about that right now, because the state-chartered banks are different than the federally chartered banks. So,
yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, this dual regulatory existence for banking is similar to what exists on the securities or on the investment mm-hmm. side of the equation. So in investments, you have the SEC that regulates federally, and then you have the states that regulate locally. Somewhat similar in the banking arena, you have federally chartered banks, which are regulated by the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency.
So you don't have to regulate them at all?
Yeah, that's exactly
okay,
right.
Okay, so they're off your department. So give me a couple examples of federally chartered ones.
In Vermont?
Yeah.
So, for example, Chittenden Bank used to be a state-chartered bank. And then in 2008, 2009, they were bought by People's United Bank, which is a federally chartered bank. So okay. Now, as a consequence of that merger, we lost a state-chartered bank and now have People's United here, which is federally chartered. Similarly, TD Bank is a federally chartered
okay.
bank.
So state-chartered banks, how many are there now?
They're now, after the merchants transaction, they're going to be 6 state-chartered banks.
So your work is getting smaller?
Well, in one way you could look at it like that, but at the same time, we have 16 state-chartered credit unions. And then, more importantly, where we see a dramatic increase are in licenses that are sort of non-traditional, non-depository institutions.
I want to get to that afterwards. Let's stick with the banking for now and the credit unions. I know there's 16 credit unions emerging as well. Are they merging on a federal level or just within the state?
Both the federal and state. And the same thing with the banking industry. I mean, there used to be something about 20 years ago in 1995. Close to 12,000 community banks. The definition of a community bank traditionally is assets under $1 billion. And today there are only about 6,400. So there's been a dramatic decrease of community banks nationally. In Vermont in 1995, we had 17 state chartered banks, which would qualify as community banks. And now, after the merchants transaction, we have six.
And we have to talk about the merchants transaction. So this merger is now with the bank that is not just a New York bank, it's in Pennsylvania as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Community National is located in New York. They're a federally chartered bank, and they have a presence also in Pennsylvania as well.
So is there something that when a bank like Merchants is intending to merge, do you have to approve the merger somehow as a part of the state regulations?
So because this is a state-chartered bank to a federal institution, we do not have to approve the merger. If it were two state-chartered banks or a federal chartered bank into a state bank in Vermont, then we'd have a much greater say as to the whether the transaction is going to be completed.
So because of the numbers background that I come from, my perception is, oh my gosh, do they have enough cash to carry through Merchants? How do we make this work? Is it all going to change? And that's up to the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, the approvals now are, first, there's a shareholder approval from Merchants. So the merchant shareholders have to approve this merger. Mm-hmm. And then their regulator, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, basically their federal regulators will have to approve as well. However, banks like Merchants Bank and Community National, I mean, they've done presumably a great deal of due diligence on each other leading up to this announcement. So they more likely than not would not ink a deal that would not be approved both by the shareholders and by their federal regulators.
And carry through and have enough cash and energy to keep that merger. And
yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, Community National, you know, they have a strong footprint in New York and Pennsylvania, and Merchants obviously has a very strong footprint in Vermont and then a little bit in Western Massachusetts as well.
So impacting all our callers out there is, so if Merchants' fees change or anything changes around Merchants, we don't come complaining to you.
That's exactly right. You can complain to us, and we will let you know, the appropriate place in which to actually lodge your complaints. But, one of the things about losing, the state chartered and the locality is, that proximity to your regulator, the proximity within the bank, the proximity to the decision maker mm-hmm. that's going to be making decisions about your loans. So that's one of the downsides to, having a bank go from a community bank to a much larger bank.
So the community bank, there is a couple other smaller banks in the state. And I believe they're federally regulated. So help me out. The two that come to mind.
In Middlebury, the National Bank of Middlebury.
And that's a federally regulated bank, even though it's a community bank.
That's exactly
right. It's in
Addison
County.
And similarly, the National Bank of Orwell, which is, I think, one of the smaller banks in the nation.
I mean, I would think so with that nice little house and one other location.
That's exactly right. So the size of a bank, you know, doesn't necessarily determine where its charter is going to be. It's some of its historic. I mean, National Bank of Middlebury has been around for over 100 years, same with Bank of Orwell. So they've made decisions about charters a long time ago and are continuing to sort of, you know, live under that federal regulatory regime.
Okay. And how many federal regulated banks do we have in this state?
Oh, that's a good question. It's somewhere around 10.
Okay. So we got a range of banking options here. If you have a question for Mike as far as what the banking, anything about banking, the local number is 244-1777, and the toll-free is 1-877-291-8255. I'll open up the lines, and I have a few more questions for Mike myself, but this is Mike Pichek. He is the commissioner of the Vermont Department of Financial Regulations, formerly BISCA. And Mike, does some of this, what does a lot of these mergers have to do? I was on the show a few weeks ago, and that's what we were talking about, like, where's the good old banks? Why are they merging?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you can see, it's a national trend. It's not just here in Vermont.
Right.
So it's a much larger story. And I think more recently, the issue has been that interest rates, you know, put by the Fed, the federal interest rate has been historically low for an historically long period of time, which means that if your bank, whether it's state chartered bank or a federal bank, is going to be making a loan, the interest rate is going to be really low. The amount of margin, the amount of money that mm-hmm. the bank is going to be making on those loans is equally thin or low. And when the economy is not growing at a robust rate like what's
right
happened
now.
Both locally in New England and nationally, it's growing but not robustly. If a bank is going to try to increase its market share, or increase its assets, going to try to grow, then one of the options it has is to merge or consolidate with another bank. It's hard to do that organically since the economy is not growing very rapidly. And it's also hard to make a discount on your loans since the loans are so thin as it is now. So more recently, one of the reasons is, I think, that historically low interest rates are putting downward pressure on banks.
So they're trying to make money and make their shareholders happy.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And they're trying to survive, too. I mean, you know, all the other – whether they have shareholders that they're reporting to, if they're a publicly traded company or mutual bank or whatever, they're just trying to make sure that they remain competitive against those that do answer to shareholders and are taking an aggressive approach to growth.
So how about as far as any legislation like the Dodd-Frank legislation, did that affect banking as well?
Well, one of the things that we hear from the banks and particularly the community banks, under Dodd-Frank, the definition is actually is $10 billion is where the sort of the cutoff is in terms of some of the extra Dodd-Frank regulations. Mm-hmm. And now one of the interesting things is that Merchants Bank, which had about $1.9 billion in assets, and Community National, which had about $8.7 billion, will now, as a combined bank, be over that $10 billion number and will face these extra Dodd-Frank regulations. So things like the CFPB have additional...
CFPB in English for the rest of us?
The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Okay, that Elizabeth Warren got in
but
couldn't head up. There we go.
That's exactly right. So they're a relatively new regulator. They have additional oversight that kicks in to banks when they hit the $10 billion mark. Additionally, additional mandatory stress tests are included when you are over $10 billion under Dodd-Frank. So, you know, some banks do stress tests on their own. And a stress test is basically if the economy went sour to this degree and you know, this many of your loans went bad to this degree, could you survive or would you need help?
How much cash do you have?
Yeah.
Right.
And then, you know, there's other changes as well. Like, for example, once you're over $10 billion, there's a limited amount that you can charge merchants. Bank, not the bank, but merchants that sell a retail store, you know, retail stores on your debit card transactions. So the way in which you can make money becomes a little bit more difficult as well. So these are all considerations. And you'll see banks that are at $9.5 billion that are considering whether they want to go up over $10 billion.
Because of that regulation.
Yeah.
I got it. So regulation, so we have two things going on. One is the interest rates are low, which is great for the consumer.
Yeah.
But it's getting rid of our local banks that we really like to walk in and talk to people at.
Well, it's certainly putting pressure on them. I mean, as you can see, I mean, even before the historically low interest rate environment, you know, in the 1920s, Vermont had 59 state chartered banks. And, I mean, these were banks that were really probably in some people's kitchens and living rooms, to now having six in 2016. So clearly there's been a long sort of migration toward consolidation and merger. But certainly recently, the interest rates are one of the driving factors.
Is it different when credit union merges?
Pretty much very similar. I mean, they don't have, you know, the traditional shareholders. They have members that they have to answer to and get approval from when they do a merger. If it's a state-chartered credit union, then, you know, we would have a say as to, you know, the mechanisms of the merger and how it's going to look afterward. But it's a pretty similar situation. And just so that you know and your listeners know, when it comes to a credit union, there's both state chartered credit unions and then nationally chartered credit unions as well.
Just like the banks. So now we're learning who to call if there's a problem. But what should we be looking out for as consumers?
Well, as a regulator, and I think, you know, we step in the feet of the consumer when we're thinking about this, but, you know, do you have access to financial services that you need in the communities in which you live? For example, People's United Bank was previously Chittenden Bank, and they were the last state chartered bank, you know, that had a statewide footprint to merge before Merchants. Merchants was our last statewide bank.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that, you know, all of a sudden the way in which they operate changes. I mean, People's United Bank continues to be a good Vermont business with a philanthropic identity here in Vermont. They have over 1,000 employees in the state, People's United. So they clearly are an important component of our Vermont economy and our Vermont community. So that's not to say that Merchants Bank, with its 32 branches across the state, is all of a sudden going to pack up and leave or dramatically change the way that they do business. But as a regulator, we want to ensure that whether it's through traditional banking, state chartered banks, credit unions, other licensees, that people across the state have access to the banking services they need.
So I want to talk about those other licensees, but I want to remind people that I am here with the Commissioner of Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, Mike Pichek. And if you want to call in with any questions, the local number is 244-1777. And the toll-free is 1-877-291-8255. So, Mike, I noticed a trend in Burlington that some of the banks from not the Chittenden County area are coming in and just doing loan services in Chittenden, Burlington area. Is this part of a bigger trend? I noticed two, so...
Well, this is a little speculation on my end, but I'll gladly go there if you'd like. I mean, you know, Chittenden County is, of course, the most rapidly growing area of our state, both economically and by population. So I think frequently, whether it's a bank or other financial institution or any other business, I mean, if they are looking to grow, clearly one of the growth areas in Vermont, or maybe one of the only growth areas in Vermont, is Chittenden County. When I talk to banks that don't currently have a footprint in Chittenden County, and I say, are you thinking about growing or moving or expanding to Chittenden County? And they say, well, you know, one of the things that's unique about Chittenden County versus the rest of the state is that people are very transient. So they will look for the best rate. They'll look for the best deal. They'll pick up their deposits from a bank and go to another bank, you know, without thinking twice about it, where some of these other community banks or credit unions have customers that have been around for, you know, 50, 60 years, or they're intergenerational, I mean, in terms of their customer base.
That makes sense. That's what the average Vermonter relationship.
Exactly right. So when some of the banks that don't have a community or, you know, don't have the ability to compete with some of these national banks at the same rate, they worry about moving into Chittenden County because they don't think, you know, maybe they won't be able to get the market share that they would otherwise be able to get.
And so they're moving in with the loans. Now, you regulate other loan and business services as well. So tell us about that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the terminology that's been thrown around as of late is fintech or financial technology companies. Mm-hmm. So often these fintech companies need to get licensed with state regulators when they're operating within Vermont. So just for example, I think it was in 1995, we had 415 licenses. Now in 2016, we have about 3,400 licensees. So the number of licensees in the state has dramatically gone up. There are things like licensed lenders, which are people that are offering loans to Vermonters, which are not traditional banks or depository institutions. So, for example, you might be familiar with marketplace lending. which are peer-to-peer lending, so Prosper Lending
and
Club.
Those are state-regulated?
Well, they do have to get a license, depending on the state. In Vermont, they do have to get licensed as a licensed lender. And there are a number of other local Vermont businesses, and then there are other national businesses that come in and need to get that type of license.
Great. That's interesting. I'd like to talk about that more, but we have Gene from Waitsfield on the line. Hello, Gene.
How are you guys today?
Hey, Gene.
Hey, I got a question about banking. I know Vermont is considering allowing Vermonters to smoke pot legally here in the state. How does it affect the finances that will state banks be able to accept those funds since there's still a federal law against marijuana?
Great question. When there's a federal law, how is the
Yeah, Gene, that's a great question. And to tell you the truth, one of the last big hurdles before legalization, I think, in Vermont and across the country is what to do with the money that's generated from a recreational marijuana business. So in Colorado, they've been dealing with this now for a couple of years. And when I speak with the commissioner from Colorado, he says, the entities that have actually filled in the space are local state chartered banks and state chartered credit unions. And just for everyone's sort of background, right now, marijuana is a Class A or sort of top tier drug under the CSA, which means that any bank or financial institution that banks monies that are derived from a business related to marijuana potentially could face aiding and abetting crimes at the federal level. So a lot of the federal institutions and even the state institutions have been weary of accepting marijuana deposits. Now, in Vermont, we've had medical marijuana now for a couple of years. There's four licensees that have a medical marijuana dispensary license, and each one of those dispensaries are now banked with a state-chartered credit union. So they've both entity called the FinCEN and the Department of Justice have put out information and put out guidance for credit unions and banks to follow if they want to bank businesses that are in, whether it's recreational marijuana or whether it's medical marijuana. So there does seem to be an answer to this question of what to do with the money.
Great. That's pretty clear cut. Thank you, Gene, for a great question from Waitsfield. Again, I'm here with the commissioner of the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, Mike Pichek, and the number is 244-1777 or toll-free 877-291-8255. And I want to follow up to that licensing, that you have to license these other lenders who's come in.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about, we're talking about how our number of banks, our number of credit unions have traditionally slowly been on the decline. I mean, this is an area that has had tremendous growth from the 1990s.
It's kind of like the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just
right.
The internet. That's where a lot of it's coming from. And if you license it, do you also regulate it?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have the opportunity to do examinations like we would for any credit union or bank that's chartered in Vermont. Oftentimes, they're desk examinations, so we won't physically go out to their location, but we'll request information and review it, particularly if they have Vermont clients. So there's a number of financial institutions, fintech institutions that are registered here in Vermont, but don't necessarily have any clients in Vermont. Just from a regulatory perspective, they get registered everywhere. Or they might have a small number of clients. So we look at, those fintech companies that have a big presence in Vermont.
So it makes me feel a little better when I hear about those lending associations. They do have to have some licensing. Someone's looking at them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But, I mean, if you think about one of the big trends, not just that they're rapidly growing in Vermont, but when we look at our complaints that we receive in the banking division, about 87% of them are toward one of these licensees. So clearly, a lot of our attention and focus is now shifting from our traditional banks and credit unions to these licensees.
So my idea that there's some fly-by-night aspect could be true for some of them.
It could be true for some of them. The other issue is that, if you have a problem with your bank, you can call them up on the phone. And if it's merchants, you could have gotten somebody probably on your first call Northfield Savings Bank or whatever. With these national fintech companies, ever getting to a person is very difficult. Once you get to a person, their flexibility to work out whatever your particular problem is isn't as great as, your local bank
of Orwell. It's something to think
about
as a Vermont personalized service. We don't want to lose that. And part of it, it's where are we taking our business? Right now we have Sam on the line from Williston. And Sam, welcome to the show.
Good morning. I was wondering, do banks still allow, in a foreclosure situation in Vermont, to, if they sell up and above what is due to them, they can keep the profit and not turn that over to the people they foreclosed on? I knew Texas and Vermont had that stipulation. And is that still the case?
Well, one of the good things about Vermont is that we luckily have very few foreclosures, even in the 2008.
We were preemptive. We had some great laws in place, and we thought ahead. That was a good move.
Well, I think we thought ahead, but I think it's also, I mean, the state-chartered banks and credit unions were very risk-adverse, and they always have been, and they are very, very strong financial institutions, the ones that we regulate, and I'm sure the ones that the federal government regulates as well. So we have a historically low foreclosure rate in Vermont. And the laws on the books are very favorable to those that are being foreclosed upon in Vermont. So, you know, the process is both fair and sort of takes place in a very sort of methodical way to ensure that the bank has been acting appropriately and to ensure that nothing that the consumer is not being taken advantage of in any way.
So do we have different laws than other states about foreclosures?
The only familiarity I have with the different laws is the fact that, you know, they're so sort of homeowner focused and that they take a long time both to finalize foreclosure once it goes through the process. So I do think that our laws are a little different. But from what I'm aware of, and again, this is more once a foreclosure does happen, it's more in the judicial system, that the regulations and statutory framework that we have in Vermont does favor homeowners to ensure that the banks have done everything appropriate up to the time of foreclosure.
So they could have the option of giving the property back to the owner, the original owner.
Yeah, and I think what Sam was talking about was if the bank owns, you know, owes $100,000 on the mortgage, but you sell it for $200,000, who gets that last $100,000?
Yep.
And of course, you know, I'm unfamiliar with anything that would say that the homeowner does not get that $100,000.
Okay, thanks a lot, Sam. So when we have these other regulations, I want to make sure I wrap up and get you into work there to regulate everything you need to look at.
And as you were talking about earlier, it's Halloween today, and the Department of Financial Regulation really celebrates Halloween. It's our 30th year of having Halloween extravaganza, so I'm sure everyone at the department has spent more than the $83 or whatever it was that the average person
spends. Wait a minute, you didn't come in costume
I have it in my car.
Oh, you do? Can you please do tell what the costume is so we can recognize you when we head to Montpelier. Oh, no.
Within the four walls of our office, I think, is where we celebrate
you keep
Halloween.
It. Gotcha. So is there some special reason you celebrate Halloween?
Well, you know, I think it's just, you know, the department really, in my view, is sort of the gold standard when it comes to state agencies in Vermont. I mean, our employees are extraordinarily hardworking. They're very qualified. They have industry experience. They have advanced degrees. And, you know, they work very hard and do a very good job. So only so often during the year do we get an opportunity to sort of come together and enjoy each other, one at our picnic in the summertime and the other for Halloween. So
here we are.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was the end of, like, if it was the end of tax season
some
reason. No, we'd get it. Okay, Fred from Newberry's on the line. Do you get a question for us, Fred?
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my question is, if the Fed increases the discount rate or the rediscount rate, how does that affect my savings account? If it increases the rate, will I get more interest on my savings account?
Yeah, Fred, that's a great question. I mean, you're absolutely right that, you know, if the Fed increases the interest rate or the rate that it loans to other banks, eventually as an effect of that, the interest rate that a bank offers to its depositors will go up. Now, you know, the amount of increase that the Fed has been talking about recently, you know, you probably won't even notice a change when it comes down to your bank account. It's going to take quite a bit of time until rates rise to the point where you're getting a considerable yield on your deposits in your bank account. You know, during the 90s, it'd be times where it would be, you know, upward of, you know, 6, 7, 8% or something like that. In the 80s, it might even be even higher, over 10%. So we've been pretty low for a long time, and the Fed won't increase that quickly or rapidly. It will probably be a slower, gradual increase depending on how the economy is doing.
Okay, thanks a lot, Fred. So as we wrap up here, because I kind of don't mind keeping you now that I know you're going off to a Halloween party. I thought if I kept you to 11, maybe you'd invite me off to go there, banking and finance.
Well, I mean, if you can imagine how a Department of Financial Regulation celebrates, maybe it won't be that much fun.
Oh, I think differently that you may have it. So the part of the reason I wanted to have you here is about this merger of merchants, and it seems like in one sense, we don't have anything to worry about. We might not be able to go across the state with as many locations. I think merchants had 32. There's still regulation.
Yeah, there's still regulation. I mean, the one thing that you lose when you lose sort of a local bank or a state chartered bank is that all the decision making, whether it's to make a personal loan to you or a business loan to a business that you're starting up, we're all made locally. I mean, at least they were made in Vermont.
Yep.
And as you see with our federally chartered institutions that have a footprint in Vermont, but the decision makers are not local. So, things that get, thrown away are things like, maybe some personal history that you have of the person, or, things that are beyond simply their financial picture that give them creditworthiness that, a larger financial institution won't take into account. But a local state chartered bank or even a local federally chartered bank may.
Right. So it's back to that personal and shop local.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, that sort of buy local, farm to table, invest local. I mean, that aspect of it.
That will keep those local banks there if we keep them going in business. Well, it has been great to have you and nice to meet you, Mike Pichek, from Vermont Department of Financial Regulation.
And Christine, this was terrific, and I can't believe it's your first show. You're doing great.
Thank you very much. Happy Halloween, and I want to sneak over there and see what's going on over in Montpelier. Maybe this is the day to go. Take care.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome back to Open Mic. This is Christine Moriarty, and we've just had a mixed mash of morning between Halloween and financial regulation. I didn't think there was a tie-in, except that the commissioner had to leave to make it to a party at his office for financial regulation. So I guess Halloween is a big financial day in the state of Vermont, anyway, in Montpelier. So if you have any questions or thoughts about your favorite Halloween costume or what you're doing for tonight's celebration, give us a call here. Or if you have a follow-up on the banking question, because I think I learned a lot about what's going on in the federal versus state bank regulation world. The number is 244-1777 or toll-free 1-877-291-8255. So despite the fact I wanted to talk about the Patriots 41-25 win over the Buffalo Bills, I did come in and talk about a lot more of the news of what's going on in the world as far as Halloween and this big day. And we even got Ken in here with an update on the Wheels for Warmth. So Halloween, we went over with Gwendolyn Evans earlier. It's really started as a Celtic holiday, and it is now celebrated worldwide, and it's becoming more and more of an American holiday that's going back into Europe and being celebrated over there with costumes, candy, and the like. If what you do for Halloween is something unique and different, whether go to a haunted house or make your travels somewhere fun, let us know if you have a Halloween tradition or if it's just those young kids coming to the door that kind of annoy you. I know some people like to just leave the candy outside, though I tried that once. I just never knew if people just came and took it all. I had a run out, and I left it there, and when I came back, it was all gone. And I thought there must have been a run in Lincoln of people coming for trick-or-treat candy. One of the favorite costumes that I ever saw or was able to dress up in was easy. I thought it was very easy because I could get dolled up as much as I wanted and smear my makeup all over my face, because that's not my strong point anyway, and put on a life preserver marked SS Titanic. And that was a good go-to outfit. How about you, Tom? Did you have any good go-to outfits?
I've never heard of the one you just mentioned. I have a huge, I'm kind of an amateur Titanic historian, so that was,
hey,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was pretty good. I could wear my best dress and still look like I dress for Halloween without getting too...
Those homemade costumes, though, I had a great-grandmother, who would probably be about 110 now. She used to make me costumes.
Oh, did she?
One was a lion. They were very good.
Really? And where are those costumes now?
I have a mom who was a nurse, retired nurse, so everything... It goes away. Spring cleaning.
You
know, she kept a lot of stuff, but a lot of stuff does not. Like, I think we take the Christmas tree down halfway through Christmas Day. It's just very efficient at my mother's house.
Yeah. Okay, so she's on it. My best costume, and I actually found the picture of it this weekend for some reason. It just popped up on my screen. I'm wondering now if cyberspace actually understands it's Halloween and can find my photos on my computer, but up pops the picture of when I was about 8 or 9 years old. I got a Bugs Bunny outfit.
Oh, that's cool.
So forget about superheroes. I was delighted to be Bugs Bunny.
Did you have the carrot?
No.
It's his big prop. He uses the carrot.
Yeah, I think I carried the carrot with me, but I had a full mask and then a nice nylon. I'm sure it wasn't flame retardant at all.
Probably not.
One piece that tied up in the back. So I was good to go. I thought I should have even got more candy out of that deal.
Yeah. Well, of course, the big thing, too, is just to be aware that the kids are out and just drive careful. It's slippery enough, as you found this morning.
Found unexpectedly in places it's slippery enough, and I am in one piece. I just chose not to go over McCulloch, and I will always listen to Roger Hill when he tells me put on the snow tires right away.
He's often quite right. I can read the forecast till tomorrow just to let people know what kind of trick-or-treating.
Please
Hill,
do.
If you'd like
to
me
give
to.
The forecast, and then I think we need to do another break.
We can do that as well. Let's see. Good plan. Let's see. We had the clouds and some wet snowflakes up in the higher elevations, which you probably ran into of some slick commute this morning. And then some sunshine this afternoon, so that's good news. Still kind of cool. I guess the normal lows, right, or the normal highs would be in the lower 50s, so we're going to be about 40 to 45, according to Roger. Tonight for Halloween, how did that lady, what are we supposed to say?
Oh, Sallow Eve.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was very, so that.
It's really the Celtic pronunciation of Hallow's Eve.
Yeah. I'm Scottish, so I'm definitely into all that. So clear skies tonight, temperatures going to be in the 40s, the lower 40s, maybe upper 30s, like after midnight. It could be a little bit frosty. Temperatures getting down to about 30. So we start in the low 40s, falls down to about 25 to 30. And then tomorrow, sunshine, could be a few showers in there. Temperatures getting up to 50, and it looks like by Wednesday, maybe up to 60. So some of that warmer weather, more seasonable, coming back around.
What I need for driving over the McCulloch.
Yeah, and get some more time to get those snow tires on. So we'll take a break, and we'll be back.
Happy Halloween. You're here with Christine Moriarty on Open Mic. And whether you're celebrating Halloween or believe in ghosts or not, we are glad you're along. We were talking with Mike Pichek, who is the Commissioner of Vermont Department of Financial Regulations. I have to look at that because it was BSHFRA for years. So now he's the Commissioner of Vermont Department of Financial Regulation, and Mike Pichek was here talking about banking and the merger that's happening at Merchants Bank with a New York-based bank. And that brings it to a three-state bank, Vermont, New York, and Pennsylvania, those three states. And this changes it to a federally chartered bank. That's what I learned today, rather than the state chartered. So when you hear in the news that we are losing a state-chartered bank, that is the difference. This Merchants was a 32-office bank that definitely served all of the states. So you could bank from Brattleboro up to Burlington and beyond, and you could go to the same bank. Now it's going to be still there. The offices, they're saying they're not having a huge cut in employees or anything, and the branches will be there for now because they're moving into the state. And we're finding out the downside of the interest rates. So people are always talking about how low interest rates are at the bank, and I hear people complaining all the time, you're not getting anything in savings, why put money in your savings account? Well, it's the only place that's federally Deposit Insurance Corporation will insure. And that's one of the reasons you have cash in the bank. It's there's insurance. We all know about the 1929 run on the banks after the stock market crash. And that's when this deposit insurance came in. This works for the state and the federal banks. And now we're not getting much interest. Well, the flip side is back in the 70s, when you were getting a large amount of interest in the savings account in the banks, what happened was you are also paying 18% for a home loan. So right now is a great time to buy a house or a car if you need a loan or get any kind of business loan. However, the side impact as we as people have personal interest that we pay is a lot less. Banks and are having a hard time making a living. So they make money when there's more higher interest rates and more of a spread that people can have. So this is why we're seeing the consolidation in the banking industry along with the regulations. So there's more regulations that banks have to follow through on, which is partly an outgrowth of 2008, but it was happening before, as we all witnessed with People's buying and taking over Chittenden Bank and that merger that came on. So we just have one other step in the state. We have some other banks that do range across the state that in different places, but usually they're in pockets of areas, as Mike mentioned, the National Bank of Middlebury. So there's the National Bank of Middlebury in the area of Addison County and has one bank in Hinesburg and Chittenden County. But basically, we don't have a statewide bank that they can that you can go to anymore. The other thing that came up when we were talking about to Mike is that credit unions are also regulated by the state. So there are some state-regulated credit unions and there's federally regulated credit unions. And there's some mergers in the credit unions as well. And a credit union is owned by its members, and its members are the people who make deposits. So I am just reflecting back to a protest on Wall Street several years ago, and that the name Walk on Wall Street, Tom, what was it?
You'd have to ask, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, everyone knows what I mean. I'm just having a blank on what it was on Wall Street. It's kind of coming back now that we want those local banks, because what the conversation with the commissioner really sent across the message that the more we spend time and go to local banks and give them my service, the more app we're going to have them in the community to work from. And
I'm sorry, I remember it's Occupy Wall Street.
Thank you very much. Sure. Occupy Wall Street. I knew it was something Wall Street, and they didn't want to occupy it at all, because here's people who are saying, let's bank local, let's do finance local, let's have things small time. And you know, even though some laws like the Dodd-Frank one came in, there were some that like the Glass-Steagall that came out, that went out in the early 90s, that caused some of these changes in banking. And now we have bigger banks, the option for bigger banks. Because if anyone out there remembers, 20 years ago, you couldn't merge two banks together across state lines. So if you had a house in Boston, but you wanted to live up here in Vermont half the year, you had to have two separate banks. So you could never make a deposit or go across state lines. Now you can make the use of picking something like Citizens Bank, or which is also in both states, or another large bank that is in both states, and you could work that way and still make deposits pretty clear cut. So for more services and convenience, we're paying a small price. So I thank you for listening for my first day on the show, where we covered everything from Wheels from Warmth to those undefeated Patriots. Well, they're defeated, but best record. To banking and my favorite, Halloween. Have a great evening.
The Open Mic Podcast is brought to you by Hickok Boardman, Dennis Ricker and Brown.
Find us online at hbinsurance.com. And you're always welcome to visit us on Facebook, in Vermont, online, on the phone. Hickok & Boardman Insurance Group. We are here when you need us.